Class war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
My attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, it's your brother Vladimir Dees. Welcome to this episode of the Class War Battlefield Podcast. Ooh. Can you feel change? And I often think about this, you know. I made a mention before of how a show that I used to listen to a lot, they don't produce very many episodes of it anymore, called Extra Environmentalist, which I think, you know, like many great podcasts that I've listened to throughout the last 15 years before it became a racket. They are missing their time because what they present on their website is great. And as we move into the 2020s and the conversation shifts from what are we going to do to address the crises that we are facing to what type of society are we going to build to live in as the crises unfolds. That's going to be the new conversation, and it's going to be one that needs to be had because the United States of America hasn't had a conversation about what type of society it wants to create. The society format was already just imposed, it was kind of imposed on us from up high. So we live in the vision of somebody else. A democratic society runs that way. If the TIC literally means T-I-C-K, tick, as in something attaching onto you and then sucking out your blood. In reality, we need something greater than that. The English variants that, or should I say the linguistic rule that changes the C to a T when you talk about a democracy and then you go from democracy to democratic, which is insane. It's one of the few words that have immense sway over how your society runs that does that. If you are a communist, that means you believe in communes. If you are a socialist, that means you subscribe to a more socialistic type of society. Hell, even if you believe in a republic, you are a republican. And yet, when you start talking about democracy, suddenly you change democracy to democratic. It's a lie, family. It's a lie. The word would be democratic. C-I-C. Democratic. Look up the suffix IC. You'll understand. You know, changing that one letter has an enormous effect on the impact of the word, but beyond that, as we make that move to that major discussion, which we need to be having, because, you know, all of the things that so-called progressives are throwing out, and I still maintain that so-called progressive label because so many of them are going to be exposed to be not who you think they are as we move through the next decade. But many of the programs that they're throwing out to do are great, but nobody's actually talking about the vision that needs to be created. And that's important. Why? That is massively important. Why? Because now you're talking about the ethics, the philosophy. What are the governing terms of your society going to be? What are they going to be? And are they going to be sustainable as this crisis plays itself out? I mean, this is huge. Many of the calls of this newer generation, and I place myself, I'm significantly older than this newer generation, which will be coming up. I place myself at the forefront of them as a listener to them. Not as one preaching to them, but as a listener. A person who is capable, hopefully, of taking in and digesting what they're saying. One of the primary calls that they're making, and they don't make it correctly because, you know, this is something that their parents and that their siblings didn't really talk about. So how could they? One of the primary calls that they're making is change the way that you run the society. Change the way that you run this and other societies so you can address the climate change issue, what they are asking for. This is the powerfulness of it. And this is what conservatives know when they talk about the war of ideas. This is what they're talking about. What they're calling for is an ethical change of what we are building the society around. That's what they're calling for. That's what they're calling for. They're saying we need the ethical change. Now, here's what's amazing about this, because most of us, we don't even think about ethics. We talk about, you know, the American dream. We talk about what made America great. But we rarely talk about ethics. Now, we'll talk about private property. That could be seen as a sort of an ethic, but there's an underlying ethic to that. There is an underlying ethic to that, which is if you carve out a space for yourself, it is yours. That's the simplest way of putting it. If I gave myself time to really contemplate it, I could come up with some high-level stuff for it. If you read a book like The Conservative Mind, they kind of try to parse out these ethics. They don't do a real good job of it. But it is in there. It is in there. But there are ethics. You know, when you start talking about private property, you're talking about a group of ethics. When you talk about capitalism, you know, I have this book that I found online called The Capitalist Manifesto. You know, kind of as the counterweight to the Communist Manifesto, you know. And they kind of try to go through that and try to explain the ethics, the governing ethics of capitalism. I really truthfully if you look at the collegiate level economic books, they do a much better job of explaining what the ethics of the society are from the standpoint of those operating within it. But if you really, truthfully want a way to gauge the ethics of the system, you got to go back to the radicals, which is why so much of their stuff has been locked away in dusty archives or destroyed. Because if you really knew the ethics, and this is another reason why Marx is hated so much, is because, you know, whatever you think about Das Kapital, Das Kapital attempted to explain how the system worked from what we would call an algorithmic standpoint, but he tried to really lay out formulaically how this capitalistic society does what it does and requires what it does. And that's why he's hated. The ethics should never be exposed, because if you expose the ethics of this system, of any system, if you truthfully expose the ethics, then you have the mechanism then to replace the system. Because it's kind of like stripping away the soil and seeing the roots of a mighty tree. And realizing those roots are tied to other roots and tied to other roots and tied to other roots. And realizing that the only way that you're going to ever take out all of those trees is you gotta poison the root system, which is unfortunately how many logging companies do it. And so you poison the root system, you kill all the trees, and they're easy to remove. So you're not supposed to talk about the ethics of the society. You're not supposed to talk about the ethics of the system. And how they get away with that is they'll say, oh, well, we have a democratic system. So all of us in our minds, we believe we know what the philosophy of democracy is. We believe we know what the ethics of democracy is. And so we don't even think of the rest. We don't even try to think of the rest. It's just there then. And they know that. That's why they do it. But I've kind of gotten a little bit off, because that's a great beginning and we need to be thinking about that type of stuff. But how I begin this was, you know, I was thinking about what was said on the Extra Environmentalist a couple of years ago, where they said, you know, they looked at all these conspiracy theories about the Illuminati and stuff, and they go, look, they had some guy on for an interview, and they were asking the guy about the Illuminati, about what he thought about all these conspiracies, and the guy said, look, you know, my biggest concern isn't that there's some massive cabal and conspiracy running this whole operation, which, by the way, there's a great book called The Globalists, which kind of suggests that there might be more of a conspiracy than we want to admit. But that's another story. But he said, my biggest concern is that these people don't know what the heck they're doing, and they're not in control. Because that means there's forces that they don't understand that's going to be very, very detrimental to what they think is going to happen. And I've brought that up many times because, truthfully, I kind of feel that. I feel that way too, that these people aren't as smart as they think they are, and it's going to get really, really, really interestingly bad when they realize they're not as smart as they are, or as smart as they think they are. But, I'm going to play a little devil's advocate here, because this is interesting to me. Let us say for a moment that as one longtime broadcaster has said that we have undergone a coup in this country. And I'm not talking Chris Hedges now. I'm talking about somebody who has been around since the 70s and I think even the 60s doing this research. But what this person argues is that when JFK, RFK, MLK, I would even add Medgar Evers in there, Malcolm X, and a bunch of other people who we do not know their names anymore. I mean, you had politicians, musicians, you know, influencers of all kinds getting murdered between the beginning of the 60s and the middle of the 70s. I mean, you had a fierce war inside this society going on. We don't tend to talk about it. Mafia hits, intelligent hits where people's cars were blowing up, planes were blowing up. I mean, there is this internal war that was happening in this country that we don't even talk about anymore. We know about Martin Luther King. We know about Malcolm X. Most of us don't know about Medgar Evers. We know about JFK, RFK. There were numerous numbers of wealthy people, of politicians and musicians, just dead. Boom. I mean, a lot of it was just chalked up to dope and drugs. But, you know, when you look at some of the talent that was really taken out, and what they were doing at that time period of their lives, you realize it's probably not as innocent as they made it seem. To say taking drugs is innocent, but many of them made it look to be like, oh, this is just you're just drug users. But no, there is a war going on, and what this person and his teacher who died back in the 80s said was that there was a coup d'etat that occurred, that the CIA essentially was an arm of big business, and what it did was it got rid of all the people who didn't want it there, and then it stretched its tentacles everywhere so it could control everything for this small group of people. Now, we would think that seems pretty damn stupid. However, most of us have seen Counterintelligence 1, 2, 3, 4, and I think 5. If you haven't, it's a great documentary. Go to YouTube, check it out. But we've heard about the deep state. Many of us don't have any clue what it is, but we've heard about the deep state. And we believe sort of that there's something bigger going on. We've even talked about oligarchy, but not many people understand how dangerous oligarchy is, because oligarchy oftentimes leads to violence, because you will have one or two people vying for the position of head of that group, even though, you know, in the beginning they will share power. The oligarchy, it really will be run one for all and all for one. But to maintain order, they will restrict the number of people allowed into this group, and then if people don't play exactly by the rules that these people said, or if they happen to say, look, we have to do more things that are more humane, we can't just go and ruin the society for our wealth and for our own benefit, these people will be forced out. Some of them, if they're too powerful to force out, they will be killed. And what happens then, and this happened in Rome. What happens then is, and in Rome it was the Senate, may I say, but you'll have these powerful people jockeying for position, and then suddenly some of these powerful people will use tactics to remove their enemies that other people prior to them wouldn't have ever thought about doing. And you'll have a newer generation seeing this. And they will then come up believing that, okay, this is how you get things done. And they may not do horrible things, but they may push the envelope just a little bit. And then the next generation, just a little bit more. And then the next generation, you suddenly have the equivalent of kings ruling over the oligarch. And thus, if you have kings ruling over the oligarchy, guess what happens? You have kings ruling over whatever society it is that the oligarchy resides over. And I believe somewhat that that is what we're heading towards, if we aren't already to that period in time. What does that have to do with my previous statement about control? Well, one, these people are never as smart as they think they are, because they're about naked power. And because they're about naked power, they don't like human willpower. They hate human willpower and do everything that they can do to control it. But, assuming that there was a coup, and that only after the 1990s did that coup really solidify, because I know people love to bash Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, and there's reason to do it. But there was a struggle with Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton during the 1990s, and it would be best if all of you really did go back and take a look at that, about what happened when they tried to get national health care. Because it was a dirty fight. And I, at that time, I didn't appreciate what was actually happening. But there is an upper-level elite fight against national health care. There was something going on with that. And all of you need to be checking that out. But what was obvious come 2000, when 2000 hit, was that the elite had made a decision to take the election out of the hands of the general population. And what is pretty obvious from that point on, and really maybe even from 92 on, but definitely from 2000, is that there has been implements of control slowly and steadily added onto this country. And so with that in my mind, and with me thinking about that as even being a possibility, because most people, you know, this is why they went after Julian Assange so badly, because Julian Assange and Chelsea Manning exposed the fact that the government, at the behest of the elite, don't listen to this nonsense about, oh, well, this corporation didn't want it, that corporation didn't want it. Understand something. The corporations dangle below the oligarchy. The oligarchy are the people, most of which you do not know the names of, who are atop those corporations. And many of them, as is laid out in The Globalist, are run by these huge, massive, multi-trillion dollar corporations. But the corporations may not have wanted those things, but I guarantee something. Those oligarchs wanted it. They wanted to be able to spy on all of America. They wanted to be able to do that. I was listening to, I think it was RT, and they were talking about how, you know, everyone's looking at Cambridge Analytica, but Warren Buffett has an outfit. I think it's Warren Buffett has an outfit. It's either Warren Buffett or David Koch has an outfit that is more powerful than Cambridge Analytica. Their outfit has a database where every American, or at least the ones that they can get their hands on, that database includes that person's name and 1,800 specifics about that person. 1,800. The oligarch wants the power. The oligarch wants the power. But here's the thing. And this, I don't want to say frightens me, because it doesn't really frighten me so much as this is where my mind went. Let me just put it this way. This is where my mind went with this. So you have the coup, which has been taking place, and then, you know, with some key legislation that was put into place in the 90s, that really solidified the power base. And so then in 2000, you had a blatantly stolen election, and again in 2004. Now, there was some anger and rage, particularly amongst Black Americans, from the fact that we knew we were screwed in 2000 and 2004. We took the fall for 2000 and 2004. Now, what do you do if you are an oligarch and you are now putting together a system wherein control is going to be the primary outcome. And you have this population which is absolutely activated because they knew that their votes had been tampered with and that they were being targeted for voter elimination. What do you do? Especially if you know that your Supreme Court's going to get to decide if they get to vote under the prescriptions laid out in the 1965 Voting Rights Act. I think it's five, might have been four. What do you do? Do you put in somebody who previously had said some things that were not so nice about black folks? Or do you maybe put in a much friendlier face? Somebody who black people could admire and love at the same time when he himself was doing nothing to protect the rights of those citizens, if we can even call them that. Well, I think you know where I'm going with that. So then you have Barack Obama. Barack Obama was a shoe-in because the ground had been primed for him. Now, mind you, because we often forget about 2008, and I've been listening to some old Countdown with Keith Olbermann's from 2008. Didn't even realize I had them. As soon as I found them, plugged them into the MP3 player and started listening to them. We forget about John Edwards. And it's important that we remember John Edwards because John Edwards got screwed in 2004. He got screwed in 2004. He should have been the candidate in 2004. He got screwed by a guy named John Kerry. Here's the funny thing about John Kerry, and I didn't realize this. I was listening to something else. I can't even remember what I was listening to, but they happened to mention John Kerry's middle name. John Kerry's middle name. When I tell you what his middle name is, you're going to be a little bit shocked because I guarantee you're going to say, wait a minute, I know that name. John Kerry's middle name is Forbes, as in the Forbes 500. Not saying he's connected to it. There's many people with the name Forbes. But tell me if that's not coincidence. Tell me if that's not coincidence. But John Edward, who was actually a favorite, and he was favored for the coming up year, 2008, he was more favored than Hillary Clinton. People forget about this. She and he were polling very well next to each other, but he was still beating her before Barack Obama got into the contest in polls. Oh, yeah. So you install this guy who can look pretty while you're putting in all of these mechanisms of control. And to be fair, I really think Obama was very, very naive. And even he admitted it. He gave a speech in 2010 where he mentioned his naiveness. And we need to take this in. We need to understand what's happening. Because, ladies and gentlemen, just because you don't believe we have a king or a queen doesn't mean that we don't have a king or a queen. Just because you don't believe that you are living under an authoritarian dictatorship doesn't mean that you're not living underneath an authoritarian dictatorship. You can ask many black people, and they'll tell you. They live in cities where they are under constant surveillance. They are living under an authoritarian presence. But most of you have no clue about that. You listen to rap music from the late 80s and the early 90s, and you don't actually hear what they're talking about, because they're talking about living under siege, under military occupation, which is why so many people many black people and brown people don't like the damn cops. I'm going to be straight with you here. So Barack Obama gets into office, and I guarantee something. Every president gets a call from when it gets a number of these calls from these oligarchs who tell them what the agenda is. Because let me back up a little bit here to explain this to you. To understand how the government runs, you have to understand that the government is set up like a corporation. That's what you have to understand first and foremost. This is something that has been discussed in the past, but it's not discussed very often. The government is set up like a corporation. Now, here's the funny thing. There is the public face of the corporation, the government. And then there is the private face of the corporation, the government. The public face of any corporation is what? The executives and the board of directors. But the private face of any government, of any corporation, is what? They tell you this all the time. Who has the most power in any corporation? The investors, particularly the minority investors. Now, most of us, when we think about that, we think of what? We'll say the Federal Reserve. Why? Because that's what Ron Paul makes us all believe. But Ron Paul, for whatever reason, has us looking right when we need to be looking left. Yes, yes, the Federal Reserve is a part of the system, but it isn't the only component. As it's laid out in the Globalists, you have people with so much money that they could walk into the Federal Reserve, and these people are calling the shots. They could walk into the Federal Reserve and say, look, I want to buy this building and everything in it. And we have the capital to be able to do that. And they wouldn't be lying. They wouldn't be lying. The people who call the President of the United States are not well known. You know, right now everyone knows Warren Buffett and the Koch brothers. But there are hundreds of others that you don't even know exist. We know Jeff Bezos too, may I say. Jeff Bezos is in the club. But there's other people around him that you have no idea about. And I'll tell you, there's a book that I was re-listening to. What is it called? I think it's called The Quants. I was re-listening to it from 2010. And it was about the financial crashing of, obviously, the economy from the subprime mortgage debacle. And there were names of people who are running hundreds of billions of dollars of these things, sometimes even a couple trillions of dollars, never even knew who they were. And many of these people, if they were running $1 trillion, they got out when they were, you know, they had $500 billion or $500 million or a couple billion dollars. Some of them didn't get out fast enough and lost everything. But this is how this works. So the people who are calling the President of the United States, these people are massively wealthy. And they give to the President, they give to the Congress members, whatever it is that they're supposed to do. And that's going to be the agenda. Now, to be fair, you've seen in the earlier portions of Donald Trump's presidency, he was trying to fight against that. I know, he's made out to be a villain, he's made out to be the horrible, horrible person that's destroying this country, but if you look at some of what he was doing behind the scenes of all of that nonsense, he was trying to fight against it. He didn't want to be antagonistic against Russia. You know, his policy towards China has become more and more hawkish, not less. I mean, he was trying to fight against it, and truthfully, Obama tried to fight against it, but was repelled. And one of the reasons, you know, that famous picture of Obama and video of Obama sitting next to Trump, Obama looked pissed. That famous video where he looked pissed. And the reason why he looked pissed was because he had been assured. He had been assured, I believe, that Donald Trump wasn't winning that election. That Hillary Clinton was a shoo-in. That what he started, if he played ball, If he played ball, listen to what I'm telling you. If he played ball, this was early on in his presidency, when they looked at him and said, Mr. President, you're going to do what we want you to do, or be a one-term president, or worse. He was assured, if he played ball, if he didn't go for the public option, people want to get angry at him about this, but they are not looking at the biggest picture. They're not understanding the pressures brought Baird to Obama, just like they did with Donald Trump. When the Secret Service took that picture of his little one sleeping and posted it to Twitter, that was a statement. Oh my God, I think I talked about this too. That was a statement of saying, if you don't play the game like we want to, it'll be a damn shame if something happened to your little ones. I mean, this is the type of game that these people are playing. But he was assured, if you play ball, the next president, which would be a Democrat, because all the polls had it going that way. Don't believe this crap about, oh, well, you know, they were so upset about Hillary Clinton. Ladies and gentlemen, Donald Trump was appointed. Donald Trump was appointed. Do the research into all of the problems with the electronic voting and the so-called swing states. The man was appointed. Anyway, he was told, you play ball, the next president, implementalism, will take what you're doing to the next level. So you put into effect this weak Romney care type bill, and the next president then can build on it and go to universal health care. Cool. Obama was pissed because many of the other things that he had set up, which would have led to a greater peace. I know people, they fail to see how a shift one way doesn't necessarily pretend that you're always going to go that way, but the other. Anyway, many of the things that he set up, he played that game and got burned. And he was pissed because Trump wasn't supposed to win. But he failed to realize that the people who he was dealing with, they were never going to honor that. They were never going to. These people are shooting for ultimate control over the lives of everybody in this country. They were never going to honor it. So now, we are into a very interesting place because Donald Trump is massively unpopular. Massively unpopular. And the policies that he's supporting and putting into place, many of which executive orders to change the way the government runs, are causing chaos. And so now you have a true fight. I mentioned this back in late 2016, early 2017. You have a true fight going on because China realizes what's happening to the United States. China realizes that the United States, because China knows history, they actually teach history in China. They teach history in China. We haven't taught history over here in a very long time, especially Roman history. They know Roman history. China realizes that the United States is going into the throes of a massive decline. And they are setting themselves up to pick up the shattered pieces. Not to replace the United States, per se, but to keep the world stable enough where it's not going to cause them instability. The problem is, China doesn't realize the United States and Europe have set up a system where if you do not have one or two superpowers controlling everything, there's going to be massive chaos until the balance for the entire globe is reset. If it will ever be reset, considering the damage that both have done. They know this. So now, internally, the United States has a problem. Whom is the oligarch going to turn to lead us through this period of massive transition? Because they can let Trump stay in office, and I kind of predict that they might, ultimately. And they can shove more of this stuff through, but it's only going to cause more chaos. And the concern of the oligarch now is not that people are going to act negatively to the chaos. That is not their concern. Their concern is that people are going to look at the system and say, to hell with it. We'll just do what the hell we need to get through. And that they will abandon the system. You actually hear many people talking now about individuals losing confidence and faith in this. And they keep saying the voting system. But it's bigger than that. It's bigger than that. That's why they're now letting talk about socialism onto the stage. That's why they need to let that talk. Because, look, Bernie Sanders is a New Deal Democrat. So his biggest thing isn't about toppling capitalism. Elizabeth Warren made the mistake by coming out of her mouth and saying, oh, well, I'm capitalist to my bone. That just basically sunk her opportunity to be who the wealthy wanted her to be. Bernie Sanders is doing it smart. Because all he wants to basically do is reenact the New Deal. Which is all most progressives truthfully want. They know that if they fight and push too hard, that people will just say the hell with it. We'll start doing things on a local level because that's the mood of the country. Now, you have a massive localization movement going on, and the big corporations are having a problem keeping up with that. So they know, prophecy, what is about to happen. That the country is moving to localization to become secure in a time of uncertainty, but not to become detached nationally. Not to become detached nationally. And they're fearful of that because you become secure at a local level and yet you are still connected nationally. You can get a lot done very quickly, and you can set up, dare I say it, an alternative form of governing, which bypasses every single power check that they've put up, and that is their fear. So now, they're trying to be responsive and do it very rapidly after being unresponsive for the last 40 years. The biggest question that they have to that they have to answer now is who is going to lead through this time of uncertainty? And this is where the story gets interesting. Because all of the people running for the Democratic ticket, most of them don't stand a blue herring's chance. It just won't happen. But many of them have the potential to be great commanders in chief. The question is, who will the oligarch tap for it? Yes, Bernie Sanders is there. Yes, Tulsi Gabbard is there. Yes, Elizabeth Warren is there. We're going to see a few more emerge, especially a couple of these young ones. But Will we be handed a candidate, or will we choose a candidate? Because right now, I am very skeptical about AOC. I like her, but I always question, and I always pop the question to all of my friends, why is corporate media in love with her? Well, one of the primary reasons corporate media may be in love with her is because Cenk Uygur is starting to play ball. He's moving and positioning himself to become a power player in the Democratic Party. And I've always warned you about him. It ain't that I don't like the guy. It's that he used to always tout the fact that he used to be a conservative. And then suddenly he woke up because all the conservatives got crazy. Well, that doesn't mean that you ain't a conservative. It just means you ain't that brand of conservatism. So now he's moving into the Democratic Party. Why are they liking AOC? Maybe because of that. Maybe AOC is a little bit more conservative than we like to think because, you know, people are projecting their hopes and wishes and dreams. Ask black people how that worked with Barack Obama. We did the same thing. And I include myself in that because I was blinded by him. I was blinded by him. So why are they popping up, you know, AOC? The same thing, just because they're opposing Tulsi Gabbard doesn't mean Tulsi Gabbard is the magical person who we think she is. Even though I like Tulsi Gabbard, I have nothing against her, and I'd have no qualms right now anyway. I'm trying to find information on who her campaign staff is. I was looking on her website, didn't find anything on there. But I have nothing against her right now, and I hope I don't have anything against her, because I do like her. I think she's a good candidate. But just because they're opposing her doesn't mean that she's bad. They could be opposing her because she's not their chosen candidate, which would be awesome because it looks like, you know, she's going to attract a lot of attention. But, and I bring this up at the end because I bring it up at the end because, you know, I'm a very spiritual person and I read a lot of stuff. And I'm not even gonna put it out there like that, because it doesn't make any sense to talk about it, so I'm just gonna go past that. Anyway, I don't believe Beto O'Rourke's gonna be anything. I think if he had won, maybe he might be a bigger, but no, he's a white Obama, and that just ain't gonna work. It's not going to work. He should have waited another term. Maybe Buttigieg. Who knows? Even though I don't know if the country is going to be ready for an openly gay guy, I don't think he can win. Especially when you start talking about the Midwest and the South, I don't think he'll win. And then, who am I forgetting? I'm forgetting Yang. I said to someone who asked me about Yang, I said, you know, I'm glad he sounds nice, but Yang looks Asian. And considering most people are concerned about the rise of China, they may be uncomfortable with that, because America is first a white nation, and they tend to move away from the thing that they are scared of, even if that person isn't associated with them. So I don't think he could win either. And, you know, that's truth. That's real talk, as we say in the community. But, let me know what you think, family. You know, I always love hearing from you guys. And I know it's been a long time, but let me know what you think. Until next time.
There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio talk shows and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick.